Your board, your boss, they want 10x results from AI, right? And the only approved tool is some kind of crap that can't do your actual job. You know it. Probably your team knows it. A lot of people upstream may know it, but almost nobody wants to say it out loud because the moment you say the tool is bad, you stop sounding like the person trying to get the work done. You start sounding like the problem. You're not alone. You're not the problem for struggling with adopting the approved platform. I know that they will say you're creating shadow IT. They'll say you're asking for an exception, that you're being difficult. And underneath all of this, there's a false assumption that AI tools are basically interchangeable. They are not. A corporate default and a specialist tool can both be AI tools in the same way a spreadsheet and a data warehouse are both places with numbers. But the category is so broad, it doesn't really tell you whether the tool can do a meaningful job. The hard part is explaining that difference in a way a company can act on. Copilot is bad. That's not a statement that will do anything, right? Gemini can't do my work. Not a statement that will work. I need Claude. I need ChatGPT. I need Codex, whatever. That won't work either. Those all sound like preference. So here is what you will get from this video. By the end, you should have a way to explain why the tools are not equivalent, a test you can run without turning it into a complicated project, and a manager-safe ask that is small enough to approve. That's it. First, why is your current argument not getting heard? Why is it getting heard as preference? Second, we're going to talk about how to reframe the ask so you're not attacking the default. Third, we're going to talk about how to run the actual test, just a simple job, a couple of tools, and a week. Fourth, how the ask changes when it moves from your manager to a director to an exec. And fifth, how to answer objections you're almost certainly going to get. If you're the person who knows the approved tool is failing, but cannot say that without sounding disloyal, this is for you, because the real problem is not that your company picked a default AI tool. The real problem is that the company is expecting frontier tool results from default tool performance, and almost no one is really talking fluently about that gap. This is something I keep hearing from real users. This is why I'm making this video. Someone on your team is asking for Claude. Someone else is running Perplexity on a personal account. Someone has ChatGPT Plus on an expense report nobody wants to file. And everyone knows that the corporate default is not good at the specific work they're being asked to do. All of the individual contributors know it, and the reports are taking longer than they should. The synthesis feels shallower than it should. The code review maybe misses things. The customer digest still needs like 30 minutes of cleanup before anyone's willing to send it. At the same time, leadership is talking about AI transformation, right? Productivity step changes, all the new capacity the organization is supposed to unlock with these new tools. That's the trap. The people doing the work are being asked to produce the board's AI fantasy with a tool they already know can't do the job. But upstream, that gets treated as a preference problem. You like this tool? IT picked that tool. Everyone has opinions. Everyone wants exceptions. The company cannot run a procurement process every time one team wants a different interface. And from far away, the tools look equivalent, right? Chatbox, model, enterprise plan, security review, close enough. The difference between tools only becomes obvious at the level of the work. And we're not used to talking about that. Whether retrieval finds the right thing, whether reasoning works across messy data, whether you can output something without an hour of cleanup. And I get it, the instinct to homogenize, to get one tool, it's not a crazy instinct. Otherwise, every team gets to say, I like this better, and the stack just fragments. Security does have to review stuff, procurement has to negotiate, IT has to support, otherwise the organization becomes incoherent. But before you ask for a better tool, you have to understand why just acknowledging this is not enough. If your argument is the default tool is bad, you're kind of walking into a category that the company knows how to ignore. It's not that you're wrong, it's that you're making the wrong kind of claim. The claim that moves your IT administrator is not saying this tool is bad. It's saying for this particular job, the default costs us 4 extra hours a week compared with a specialist. I can prove it. That sentence travels through an org very differently than a complaint. So yes, we're going to talk about measurement, because otherwise, you're not able to articulate the cost of personal effort in a way that organization can read. The report stays longer and you stay late and no one notices, right? The synthesis is worse, so you rewrite it and no one notices. The code review misses things, so you manually check it and no one notices. That's the hidden tax of a bad AI default. It is paid in 30-minute chunks, 5-minute corrections, double checking, and that little internal flinch you feel when the corporate assistant gives you something that sounds plausible but isn't usable. Because the cost is distributed across individuals, it never shows up as a line item. The company doesn't see it. Your manager might not see it. Procurement definitely doesn't see it. So the first move isn't to escalate, it's to measure. And this is the part that changes the conversation. When you run the same job through the default and through a specialist, the default stops being invisible. You cannot unsee the delta. Once you've seen the same input go into two separate AI tools and one of them gives you an output you can use right away, the conversation is not about taste anymore. It becomes about performance. And that matters because companies can ignore your preference a lot, but they have to at least acknowledge the performance gap, especially if what you are measuring is something that you take the time to extrapolate reasonably, logically, across your whole team and org. If you are getting interrupted for an hour a day as a developer and you cannot figure out how to get code reviews that are actually useful, and you keep going back and having to use this tool and it's not helpful, you extrapolate that across your entire engineering team, suddenly you're looking at like an entire engineering man year of time that's being wasted, right? That suddenly becomes a relevant conversation in a way that just complaining about the tool doesn't get you. And if you're wondering if this is already happening, it is. The public version of this story is already out around engineering. In January, Jana Dogan, a principal engineer at Google working on the Gemini API, posted that she had given Claude Code a description of a distributed agent orchestrator problem her team had been working through, and Claude produced in about an hour something close to what they had built over the previous year. The visible count on that post was roughly 9 million views. It went viral. Now, the precise version does matter here. This was not Claude shipped Google's production system in an hour. It was closer to a prototype version based on a condensed description from someone who already understood the problem very, very well. But that's kind of the point. An expert could see the delta right away because she knows how to judge the output. That's the measurement you need inside a company. When a person who knows the work gives the same job to the default, in this case it was Gemini, and to the specialist, which one produces something they can actually use? So the quieter version of that story is everywhere. Engineers using Cursor or Claude Code on personal accounts, analysts paying for Perplexity because the default search experience is weak, sales ops teams running pipeline work through ChatGPT because the corporate default can't handle the shape of the data. The workaround is not the issue. The workaround is evidence. And the job to turn that evidence into a form the company can act on is yours. If you're feeling the pain, that's your job. Your argument is not failing because the tool is secretly good. It's failing because the company hears it the wrong way. So let's reframe it. And this is where most people accidentally make the ask too big. The pushback that works here is not, let's rip out the default. That version loses almost every time. It lost at Google because the company probably has legitimate reasons for picking the default. Vendor consolidation is real, volume discounts are real, compliance review is real, integration work that has already been paid for is real. If your company picked Copilot because it was already deep in the Microsoft ecosystem, that was not necessarily an incorrect decision. If your company picked Gemini because it's already a Google shop, same thing. Your team's work may not fit the default, but that doesn't make the original decision irrational. So don't ask the company to admit the whole decision was wrong. Ask a smaller and sharper question. Within our commitment to the default, what specific subset of work is the default doing worse than a specialist? And that question keeps the company's prior commitment intact. It doesn't threaten the stack, and it gives everyone a way to say yes without reversing themselves, which is politically important in many cases. Then the second question is, what would it cost us to add the specialist only for that subset? Now, that's a different conversation. It's not Claude versus Copilot. It is, this job costs us X hours a week under the default, and a specialist appears to reclaim most of that time. I can prove it. If your team does 7 things, the default handles 5 of them, okay, then don't switch everything. Keep the default for the 5 and add a specialist for the 2. The correct answer in the agent layer is almost never one tool for everything. It's routing. Default where the default wins, specialist where the job demands it. That's not a violation of standardization. It's a better standardization policy. Now, some people will now say, I'm choosing a default. Which one should I choose? And I will say, you should be choosing a default that reflects the best value you can get for the dominant use cases in your company. Are you primarily an engineering shop? Look at the models that are strong at engineering. That's really at this point going to be Claude or it's going to be ChatGPT. You're going to be looking at Codex or Claude Code at this point. If you are a knowledge workshop, you have to look more broadly because you have to look at the degree to which you want research involved, the degree to which you want a finished, polished artifact involved. It's a more complex search. But fundamentally, that's the question set you ask if you want to set a good standard. And it's a question set I wish IT would ask more often, because so often IT departments setting standards are doing so based strictly on an assumption of interchangeability that is incorrect. And instead, they should be looking at where is their differential value. And I would encourage you to think not just about differential value today, but look at the trajectory of these companies. Part of why I mentioned Claude and ChatGPT by name is both of them are shipping fast today. They're shipping quickly. They're responding to their customers. They're evolving fast. And there really isn't any other company that's extremely well capitalized on the books that is shipping that fast. And yes, that does include Gemini. Gemini has been out for a while with a strong model, but has not shipped a strong harness for that model that allows Gemini to effectively do the range of things the model might be capable of otherwise. It's so important to have a shop that understands how to scale both model and harness in 2026. And if you want capital behind that and you need to scale it and you want to believe that that model will ship frequently and update well, really, you're talking about Claude or ChatGPT. There's not really a lot of other choices out there. So that's the story if you're trying to pick a better standard. Now, if you are trying to understand how to win the conversation, let's say you've got the measurement, you understand what you're doing, you understand how to not to make the conversation too broad, the next step is to identify the actual move that you're going to make to prove that you are correct. So you've done initial measurements on the baseline. What's your test going to be? Pick a job your team does every week. Not three jobs, right? Not your whole workflow, just a job. It should meet four criteria. It runs at least weekly, so you get multiple data points quickly. It takes at least 30 minutes. That delta is going to matter. You have done it by hand long enough to recognize good output instantly, and the output has a real audience. It matters, a team channel, a customer, a manager, somebody. That fourth criterion matters a lot. If nobody ever sees it, the company can dismiss it as a personal workflow preference. If the output goes to a real audience, the quality has a reference. These are usually the jobs you're already most frustrated by. That's not a coincidence, right? That frustration you're feeling is a signal. Now run that same job through the corporate default and one of your Challenger AI tools with the same input and the same success criteria. Just check how much time was spent, how much rework was required, what is the quality score, and who did you send the result to? You don't really need a dashboard for this. Don't make it complicated. You don't need a whole productivity study. By the end of the week, you have somewhere between 5 and 15 rows of this data, depending on how often the job runs, and that's probably more real evidence about your work than anything produced during the original procurement decision. The vendor demo didn't measure your work. IT eval probably did not measure your work. You were producing missing data for the business. The next step is then to extrapolate that across similar work done at team and org scale. And that requires you to talk to and understand others in your org so you really responsibly know how much your work is being done or similar type tasks are being done across the org. And then when you report to IT, you're not just saying, oh, this is my opinion. You're saying, I did the work for you. Here's direct data. I talked to these six people. This is a sample size of the 60 people in the org. They're all corroborating this. Therefore, in total, it's X. Now it's serious. Now, this test only works if the success criteria is real. This is where people tend to mess up. They measure what the vendors measure instead of what the team cares about. Let's say the job is a weekly customer digest. The success criteria is not output length. It's not tokens per dollar. It's not whether the formatting looks nice. The question is, did this save me the 30 minutes I used to spend scrolling Slack? If the job is a code review, the question is not how many comments the agent left. It is, would I have merged this PR based on the agent's review? If the job is pipeline hygiene, the question is not whether the summary sounds like sales operations. It's, did it correctly identify the deals without next steps, the close dates that slipped, and the risks the revenue team actually needs to see? The question is always whether the agent did the job well enough to substitute for the work you were going to do anyway. And the person who can answer that is you. And that is why measurement must start with the individual contributor. Execs can commission a bigger version of this later if they want. Procurement can negotiate the seats later. IT can define the governance. But the really useful measurement, I strongly believe, comes from the individual contributors who know the job well enough to know when the output is fake. That is the advantage you have as an individual contributor. You know what good looks like. So make it real. Imagine a sales ops lead inside a company that defaulted to Copilot. Every Monday morning, she produces a pipeline hygiene report, deals without next steps, close dates that slipped more than twice, risk summaries, and a brief for the revenue leadership Slack channel. Under the default tool, she spends about 90 minutes getting the report to a standard she's willing to send. The model writes fine sentences, but it struggles with the deal history structure and it keeps surfacing the wrong slip dates. So for a couple of weeks, she runs the same job through a specialist agent wired to the same sources. The first week, the specialist draft needs maybe 20 minutes of work. The second week, it needs just 10 minutes because she's getting better at working with it. Copilot still averages 90 minutes, and let's say the quality score is just okay, like a 2 or 3 out of 5. The specialist averages 15 minutes and a quality score of 4 out of 5. And so the would you send it column flips from a no to a yes on most of those runs. And that's really the evidence, right? Now she just needs to look at how many times people are using this kind of process across the org, multiply it out, and send in the ask. And that is a version of the argument that can win because it's a version that is evidence-based. If the evidence supports one job class, ask for that job class. If it supports a seat, ask for the seat. Align to the evidence. When people skip that discipline, they tend to regret that. They tend to sort of overwalk the data. They'll walk in with 5 weeks of measurement and use it to vent, and they relitigate the decision, and they try and make it a big conversation. And the manager just hears frustration instead of evidence. Don't use measurement to vent. Use it to make a concrete ask. Now, at this point, think about it. You no longer have a complaint. You have a real artifact with a log and a job class and a delta and the smallest ask that the evidence will reasonably support. Now, if you're wondering if this is real, this is exactly how the larger enterprise stories are moving. Gurgly Oros at the Pragmatic Engineer reported on Wealthsimple, the Canadian fintech with about 600 engineers, and how their CTO, Diederik van Leer, approached AI developer tools. The code review decision had a structured shootout, right? Their coding tool decision was more conviction-driven, but still backed by usage data from Jellyfish showing which tools engineers were actually using or abandoning. That distinction is useful because nobody has perfectly solved AI productivity measurement. Lines of AI-generated code can be a vanity metric. Tool activity can show adoption without proving impact. Velocity can move for reasons that aren't related to AI. But that doesn't mean you don't measure. It means you measure closer to the work. What did the agent produce? How much rework did it need? Would the person doing the job have used the output? That informal measurement creates a very good shape for the answer. And then if you're a CTO like Diederik is, you can make a formal measure that measures behaviorally or surveys or whatever you want to decide the larger conversation. And then you have a story that looks a little bit more like the Wealthsimple story. Okay, so far we've covered why your opinion is bouncing off the org, how to reframe your ask, how to create an artifact that is really clear about what your ask is and has evidence. The next piece of the story here is essentially the altitude of your ask. The same evidence has to be translated differently depending on who's hearing it. At the IC to manager level, you can keep it small. I run our weekly customer digest through the default, and I ran it through Claude. Here's the log. Claude saved me 4 hours. Can I get an approved license for this? A lot of managers will engage with that. And if they say no, they'll usually give you a specific blocker. Maybe it's procurement or security review or team precedent or budget timing. But a specific no just gives you the next problem to solve. At the manager to director level, the ask becomes much more about a pilot, right? Three people ran this measurement, two show the same pattern. I want to pilot the specialist for those job classes for a quarter and report back. At the director to exec level, you're no longer asking for a tool. You're asking the company to commission measurement. The exec question is, how would we know if our AI default is costing us? And the honest answer is, we would only find out if our best people quietly leave for companies that give them better tools. So we need to measure something. And that's often how that goes. And yes, I've been in rooms where people worry about their best people leaving because of better tools, because guess what? People tell me that they're leaving because of tool issues. So if you don't believe that's happening, it is. It is. Your tools can determine your retention in the age of AI. Okay, how do you handle objections? There are four objections you should expect as you walk this sort of pushback on default tooling path. The first objection is, we already paid for it, right? And the response is, look, the license fee is a sunk cost. The question is whether an incremental specialist license for a bounded job returns more in reclaim time than it costs. If it's 4 hours a week per person, you can multiply that out and make the case. The second objection is, well, this is shadow IT. Well, no, shadow IT is adopting a tool without disclosure and without review. This is actually the opposite, is putting it in front of the company and saying, let's do a better job of solving this together. The third objection is, well, we need to standardize. I get it. You can verbally honor the value of standardization. There is some cost reduction. There's some simplification, et cetera. But in the age of AI, it is a mistake to treat one tool for every job as the only form of standardization. Companies already know this for other categories. They use Excel and Tableau and Looker for different analytics jobs. The agent layer is the same. Standardize on a default where it wins, but use specialists where the work demands them and measure the boundary. The fourth objection is IT will not approve another vendor. Like, they just won't. Sometimes that's true, but sometimes it's just a reflex. The way to tell is to actually push on it, right? Ask what's going on. What is the blocker? Is it data residency? Is it admin controls? It's a contract minimum? What's going on? The only version that is unworkable is no because no. If that's the answer, there's probably going to be a retention problem at that business. And then you just have to keep pushing the data. The other thing I will call out, and this is an Easter egg for those of you who have watched this video so far. This entire video is about companies who are struggling to come to terms with the AI revolution. And there's tons of them out there. For companies that are AI native, this is not a problem. I have never run into a truly AI native company where this whole argument has to be run like this, because they are defaulting to say, yes, please use tools. We want you to be productive. We're not going to put gates in your way. We're just going to try and make sure that what you're doing is data responsible, that you are using it on our systems in a way that we can actually respectably defend if we're audited, if we have compliance issues, et cetera. That's the only gate they're really putting up. And the reason I call that out is because in AI native companies, that changes the whole conversation. You don't have to make the case in most of these companies. You have a budget already, maybe as an IC, to just get the tools you need to be productive. That is a much better way to do it. If you are able to change procurement at your org to be more permissive, to let ICs get aggressive about getting the tools they need, and then you standardize once you see the behavior underneath, great, do it that way. That's a much more useful way to get value from your AI tooling, because it aligns to how people actually use the tools versus some procurement process where everyone expects Copilot to work a certain way. And I say Copilot because I hear all the time from people who talk to me that they are having exactly this experience where Copilot is the default and they're frustrated. So I'm not just using that as a paper example. It's the dominant real example I hear in this category. So what do you do this week? Pick the one job, right? If you're at one of these companies that is not AI native, that you're trying to push back, pick the one job. Not the job that makes the best philosophical point. Pick the job you can measure that is recurring and meaningful and easy for you to judge and visible enough that quality matters. Run it through the defaults and run it through your challenger model and measure it, right? And then ask for what the data supports and keep the tone focused on the data. The emotionally satisfying version of this, I know it, I feel it, right, is to say, you sort of pound the table and say, I don't get the tools I need. The AI revolution is proceeding without me. I get it. Ask for what the data supports. It's going to go way better than anything else, especially in an org that is focused on traditional procurement practices, which, to be honest with you, I'm making this video because 80% of orgs still work this way, maybe more. Most orgs run on traditional software procurement, and AI is essentially breaking that procurement process. It just doesn't work anymore. And so this is about how you start to put cracks in that procurement process in a responsible way that the org can actually handle and digest, that allows you to get the tools you need to be productive. The agent layer is going to keep fragmenting. New specialists are going to keep emerging for specific job classes. The best tool for code review might not be the best tool for exploratory coding or customer research or legal review or sales ops or product strategy. Companies that learn to measure real work against real tools will route work better as the landscape changes. Companies that don't are going to keep defaulting to whatever vendor they got 2 years ago, and they will call that discipline, even though it's really just inertia. The people doing the work will feel that difference first. They already feel it. They feel it in the cleanup, the second pass, the moment a specialist gives them 15 minutes back in their day every single day. So the question is how you get that data out of the org, how you get that frustration that people are feeling and turn it into data that you can use to get the right tools. That data is the argument. If you want this written out so you can share it with your manager, your IT department, I've got that in the Substack. Or you can share the video, right? And you can just let me argue with them, right? The key thing to understand is that this is a real conversation that most traditional procurement orgs are having. That AI native orgs don't even have this conversation because they are AI native from the get-go, and they're actually greenlighting a lot more tech with much lower decision gates. And that if you're in a traditional procurement situation, the best thing you can do is to bring data showing the specialist AI tool is actually saving you time. So that's my best advice to you. Feel free to share this with your manager or your IT department. I'm happy for them to watch this, and let me know how it goes. I want to give you tools so that when you push back, you're actually going to get AI tools that really help you do the job. And it's not just because I want you to be able to do the job for the company, right? Like, you need to have fluency with these tools at work for your career. And that's exactly why not getting this right is going to end careers for people who cannot figure it out. In other words, if you're frustrated and venting all the time and can't make this case and you stay at the company, you're in a position where you're kind of spiraling in the middle of the AI revolution. I don't want that for you. Similarly, if you do figure it out and you run into a stone wall, you're going to end up moving to a different company that has more permissive AI tooling practices. And that's a real thing. And that's your company's loss, not your loss. And you should do that if they can't figure it out and can't give you AI native tools. Talent is already moving to places where AI native tooling is available. that is one of the major themes of 2026, is that talent is concentrating. Talent is concentrating in places where AI native tooling is excellent. Don't think of it as just a procurement problem. It is a talent retention issue to get this right. All right, that's the best thing I got for you. Subscribe for more. Have fun pushing back, measure that data, and I'll see you soon.